The Maltese Falcon by John Huston, and the extract I chose is 16 minutes and 27 seconds into the film and lasts until 19 minutes and 31 seconds into the film. The Maltese Falcon is a film by John Huston, as I said. It's based on a detective novel by Dashiell Hammett, who was a well-known detective novelist of the time. It is made in 1941, but had been filmed twice before, under the name Maltese Falcon in 1931 and named Satan Met a Lady in 1936. It's considered to be the first film noir film, as it was in the early 40s, along with Citizen Kane. And it stars Humphrey Bogart as Samuel Spade, who is a self-righteous, cold, and alienated detective, and Mary Astor as Bridget O'Shaughnessy, who is the femme fatale of the movie. In the sequence I chose, Bogart is visiting Astor in the new hotel room after the death of both Miles, his partner, and Thursby, the man who Astor hired Bogart to follow and the reason why Miles got killed. She admits that she lied about the reason why she hired Miles, but Bogart says that he knew already that she lied. So then she acts sad and asks whether he thinks that the death was her fault and asks about Miles' family, and Bogart simply answers coldly that Miles had no kids, a wife that didn't love him, and a $10,000 insurance, which just shows how unsentimental he is, basically. Astor then pleads with Bogart not to mention her to the police, and when Bogart asks her whether Thursby, the other man, killed Miles, she says that he did, certainly. The main points I'm going to cover are film noir, the reason why I chose the sequence and its importance, the editing, the use of camera and mise-en-scène, the lighting, the relation of the sequence to the film as a whole, the femme fatale and the alienated hero, the social-cultural context, and how the public and critics received the film. The reasons I chose the sequence are that it represents the typical stylistic techniques of film noir, and it represents the style used throughout the entire film. It also portrays the femme fatale very accurately, and it also shows Bogart as a tough, cold, cynical detective very well, and it shows he is always in control of the situation. Furthermore, it's the first assurance that we have of the fact that Mary Astor lied to Bogart. It's the first time it's brought out into the open, but I'm going to elaborate on these points as I go on in the presentation. Film noir literally means black film or cinema in French, and it's represented by the gloomy gray, black, and white, which was supposed to bring out the darker sides of humans in the time. But it was only defined as film noir in 1946 when a film critic noticed the dark trends in the detective films of the US. So this means it's possible that Huston didn't even know he was making a distinct film noir film. It originates from the German expressionism of the 20s and the gangster films of the 20s and 30s in the US, two films that are known for their influences on the film noir are The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and Fritz Lang's M. What often happened was that well-selling detective novels were adapted for film noirs at that time, as is The Maltese Falcon, which was a detective novel. And yeah, the stylistic lighting and the experimentation with various angles and shots are what defines film noir. And of course, the femme fatale and the alienated hero, Mary Astor and Humphrey Bogart, respectively. And yeah, I'll get into those in more detail. The editing techniques used in sequence uses continuity editing. It was one of the first films to do so in 1941, along with also Citizen Kane, which was filmed at basically the same time. The complex shots are made to seem very simple because they match on action very well, and the editing is rather slow pace or languid, and this it brings out the dialogue and the reactions to the dialogue as opposed to the actions of the characters. It just like it's what they say and how they say it, not what they do really. It's just how they move, how they talk, how they look and things. Yeah, and like I said, or this emphasizes the femme fatale and Bogart as a tough detective character. The camera work and the mise-en-scene, the camera pans and then tracks often in the sequence. We see it pans on Mary Astor's movement and then tracks into a close-up of her face when she's pleading with Bogart, which... And this is just to catch the important dialogues and the reactions in close-up. Like I said, it wants to capture how the actors look, how they move, how they talk, and how the actors portray their characters, really. This is done in this sequence, but it's also typical for the whole film. It's done often throughout the film. But in general, the camera is relatively still. There's little movement, and this gives an effect of calmness. It shows that Bogart, and because the film is basically shot from Bogart's point of view, it shows that Bogart is calm, always in control, and on top of things of all times. In the sequence, Bogart is either shot from a neutral angle or from low angles, which shows also the power relation between Bogart and Astor, because Astor is always shot from a slightly higher angle and Bogart from a slightly lower angle. So yeah, this sequence is shot indoors, just like most of the film is, which gives kind of effect of claustrophobia, which could refer to the investigation Spade is leading, which is within limits because he doesn't know more than the other actors tell him. And also, this sequence is shot indoors just as most of the whole movie is. It's shot in the office, in the Fat Man's hotel room, in O'Shaughnessy's hotel room, and in Bogart's own apartment. And again, the effect of claustrophobia. In this sequence, the mise-en-scene is striped furniture. Mary Astor is wearing a striped pajama. And the window shutters cause striped shadows, which could be foreshadowing prison, as later on in the movie she does end up getting caught and goes to prison. The lighting. In the film, it's stylistic lighting, really, although practical lights are also used. The main lighting is chiaroscuro lighting, which is low-key, meaning high contrasts and a clear distinction between lights and darks. This is typical of film noir, and the effect it has is shadows that contribute to the dark and mysterious atmosphere of film noirs. In the sequence, like I said, the shutters casting the shadows on the wall. He also casts a shadow when he stands up, so we can see that the lights it's stylistic. There are shadows, yeah, like I said, there are shadows when he stands up, but also when he's sitting down in the chair, there are shadows behind him when he's speaking, and all these shadows add to the gloomy effect of the sequence, and this is representative of the whole film, really. And although this scene is not extremely low-key, other scenes that are shot, especially at night, even if indoors, have very low-key lighting and really high contrast between the light and dark. In my opinion, the highly stylized lighting takes away a little bit from the authentic feel of the film, but it's not really a big thing because it is a fiction story, so it doesn't really harm the plot or the artwork, the film art, basically. The relation of the sequence to the film as a whole, like I mentioned, the editing, the lighting, and the camera work represent the style employed throughout the whole film. And this sequence is the start of mistrust of Mary Astor. We firstly start suspecting her of being the femme fatale because she acts so innocently. And so here she's basically established as that character because we already thought it could be her, but now we know it's her because we see that she's acting extremely innocent. And Bogart is already established as a cool character, but here it is highlighted. He's the alienated hero, basically, which there were always an alienated hero in the film noir films of that time. He doesn't let anyone get close to him. He's extremely unsentimental, which is seen in the sequence that I said earlier on when he coldly tells her about his partner's marriage and life. And he always stays at a distance from things. He and sums things up, which is seen when she's pleading with him and he tells her that she's good, and then he makes a comment about her eyes and the throb she gets in her voice. This shows that he always stays at a distance. And he lives by his own code of honor, which is seen in the end when he says that when a man's partner is killed or murdered, he's got to do something about it. So he doesn't really have anything in mind but to find the murderer of his partner, because he thinks that's what's right. He lives by his own vision of what's right, if I can say it like that. The femme fatale is clearly Mary Astor in this film. Femme fatale generally is the opposite of the usual portrayal of women in those times. The femme fatale is not suppressed or distanced because of her sexuality. She tries to make men do what she wants, using her sexuality, using her sexuality, and by deceiving and manipulating the man. The alienated hero usually gets feelings for the femme fatale, and it can never work out because she is the femme fatale. And in this sequence, basically, Mary Astor is perfectly portrayed as a femme fatale. She acts completely innocent, but we already know that she isn't because she lied already. So it just underlines her as the femme fatale, and we just expect more to come from her even. The social-cultural context. The film was made in 1941, which was wartime. So that means that the U.S. was in conflict with various countries, among which also Japan. And there was the possibility of nuclear warfare. It could have happened at any time. And the effect of this was that there was high insecurity, there were high crime rates, and the people were basically scared and, I don't know, pessimistic in a way, I guess. And this just caused a tension. And the films of those times, they portrayed the tension that were caused by society in that time. And the characteristics of the antagonists in the film are, greed, violence. Basically, the criminal characteristics are metaphorical for the evil of society in film. They represent the evil of society. And the so-called bad guys were always portrayed as morally wrong and unjust. Also, during wartime, the men were gone, so the women had to do the work, basically, and they got more power. This, I would say, led to the discoveries of other sides of women, for example, aggression, which is needed in, say, the business world. And as a result of that, the negative and unknown sides of women were then portrayed in film, and basically women suffered in a way, but also, they were portrayed as sexy, but also as basically mean and, I don't know how to say it, deceiving. The public and critics saw the film as one of the greatest films of all times, which is said by Entertainment Weekly, the magazine, and Roger Ebert, a known film critic. It was nominated for 3 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Adapted Screenplay. According to the New York Times of the next day, I quote, "It's the slickest exercise in cerebration that has hit the screen in many months, and it is also one of the most compelling nervous laughter provokers yet." End of quote. So as we can see, it was a great success, the film, and Warner Brothers wanted to make a sequel straight away afterwards. But because this film was so successful, it made Bogart and Huston, both of whom it was really their first big movie. Huston had been a screenwriter earlier, and Bogart was only acting in B-movies, really. It made them really popular, so basically their unavailability made because of that, the movie was never made. It's ironic that this movie made Bogart and Huston so famous, because Bogart only got the part as another man declined the part, as he didn't want to work with John Huston because it was his first film ever. The man was George Raft, and he also turned down Casablanca later on, which was another movie which made Bogart really big. And this movie was the first big movie that Bogart and Huston worked on together, and it was the beginning of their long friendship and cooperation. They also worked together on films like Casablanca and The Treasure of the Sierra Madre, both of which were also extremely successful.